This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 20th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 392. Happy Easter and happy Passover. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the Big Deal feature, Canada's 45th election is April 28th, and a new poll paints a bleak picture of a polarized and peeved populace. According to Research Co., nearly half of Canadians polled think the federal government is oppressive and controlling. More than 2 in 5 feel that their vote does not make a difference. This week's guest is Mario Canseco of Research Co. Plus, hear the climax of the April 17th debate between the leaders of the Liberals, Conservatives, and the NDP. Which one would make the best Prime Minister? This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Beautiful spring day here in Vancouver. People out enjoying the roads and enjoying shopping and walking around the green areas here. So that's why you hear the noise in the background. So Mario, you've got this fascinating poll. You asked Canadians and Americans about political freedoms, about discussing issues, and you're showing that there is so much polarization on both sides of the border, but more in Canada than the US. Did that surprise you?
Discussions about politics have become really difficult to have. And we didn't have a third of Canadians, or more than a third of Canadians, saying that they find it very hard to agree with people when it comes to politics. It's something that is affecting particularly the younger demographic. If you're aged 18 to 34, you're more likely to react to somebody who doesn't have the same politics as you by blocking them, by not talking to them again. Older Canadians seem to have a very different way of looking at things. But I think it really speaks about the situation that we have right now, which is roughly 40% of Canadians on a given day supporting either the Conservatives or the Liberals, and the minor parties being squeezed out because everybody's looking for the big winner in the election.
And you say here that the proportion of Canadians who think the federal government is oppressive and controlling has jumped. In 2022, it was 41%, but 2025, it's 46%. So up to 46% of people say that the federal government is oppressive and controlling, and more than 2 in 5 Canadians feel that their vote in the federal election does not make a difference. This doesn't sound good.
No, it's definitely not the kind of situation that you want to have, especially when we're in the middle of a campaign. You know, to have people who are looking at their own writing and saying, my vote doesn't matter, or I want to vote for a party that didn't run a candidate this time around, or the lead for the incumbent in my writing might be as massive as to essentially render my vote meaningless. You know, it's definitely problematic, but it also speaks about the complexities of identifying with the people who are serving us in the House of Commons. I think it's definitely part of the problem. The states tends to be different in the sense that the hatred is really directed to the body. You know, people are upset with Congress as a whole, but not with their congressperson, not with their senator. There seems to be this rapport where the average American will say, I'm really happy with my congresswoman or congressman. It's the other 434 people surrounding this person who I don't like. And it's also problematic because we thought at a time, back in 2022, you're going through all of the situation related to COVID. I didn't expect the numbers to be higher on the question related to the federal government being oppressive and controlling. And it's actually higher this time around when we sort of left COVID behind. So it certainly speaks about the complexities of some Canadians to look at the situation that is developing. And it's even more troubling when it's happening in the middle of a federal electoral campaign.
In the pandemic, back in 2020, you know, 5 years ago, and even into 2021, there was this unprecedented trust for our politicians that we'd never seen before, which is, of course, what led John Horgan to call a snap election in the fall of 2020. And then less than a year later, Justin Trudeau, John Horgan won the biggest majority ever for the NDP. And then Justin Trudeau, of course, in 2021 failed to win a majority. stated a minority. And here we are 5 years later, and it's flipped. It's turned around. The trust is not there anymore. And, you know, here you have people expressing concerns about the size and the power of their government, that the government is against them. 5 years ago, it was the government is for us.
Yes. I think this is part of the difficulty that whoever forms the government after April 28th is going to be facing. You know, you're bound to have a sizable proportion of Canadians who are going to be very dissatisfied with the results of the election. For the Conservatives, it's the fact that they were leading by such a large margin in the latter stages of last year and the early stages of this year, and are somehow perplexed by the idea that they're not going to win the election. And a lot of what we're seeing happening around the center-left forces coalescing around Mark Carney is based on the fear of Pierre Poilievre becoming prime minister. So we're in a situation that is very similar to the one we saw the night before the U.S. presidential election last year. You know, no matter what happens, you're going to have a significant proportion of the electorate that is going to be dissatisfied. Now, what's interesting is, even after an election as polarizing as that one in the U.S., the numbers are lower than they were back in 2022 on most of the things that we're testing. Whereas here in Canada, it only seems to be going higher, not at the level that we see in the United States, but certainly higher than what we measured back in 2022.
Yeah, that has been the theme of this federal election campaign, is that you've had the Liberal Party under Mark Carney basing their campaign on fear of essentially Donald Trump, fear of what the Americans are doing to the economy. Pierre Poilievre, who had been expecting to fight Justin Trudeau in the 2025 election, has had to shift gears to combat Mark Carney and the Liberals. He's trying to give a hopeful message that, you know, the end of 9+ years of Liberal rule. He calls it the lost Liberal decade and says help is on the way. Similar sentiment to what John Horgan expressed before he became Premier in 2017. It's a hope versus fear election.
Well, and what's really interesting is how the age brackets are gravitating towards the messages that two main leaders are sending. We usually have elections where it's defined sometimes by gender, sometimes by region. This election particularly has been a case study for the age demographics. The over 55 voter is more likely to be concerned about Canada-U.S. relations, more likely to trust Mark Carney to manage Canada-U.S. relations, and also more likely to say that they're voting Liberal. This is a very different situation from the one that the Conservatives had in 2011 when Harper got his majority, when the over 55 bracket was solidly behind the federal Conservatives, and the 18 to 34-year-olds were gravitating between the NDP and the Liberals, and to a lesser extent, the Greens. The best demographic right now for the Conservatives is young people. They seem to be connecting very well on the housing file, and it's a situation where the message of hope is being sold in a way to young people. It's very similar to what happened with Barack Obama back in 2008. The big difference is, are you going to motivate enough young people to vote and to propel you to victory? Because if the voter turnout patterns that we've seen in the past few federal elections, where the 55 and overs vote at a substantially higher level than the young people, then it's going to be very difficult to actually win this.
And of course, Easter weekend is when the advance voting polls are open across Canada. People could still vote after Easter weekend and before Election Day at their local Elections Canada office, like they've been able to since the writ was dropped. But we'll have to see through this weekend what the voting patterns are like, the voting outcome is like. The weather is getting better here, especially on the West Coast. We'll see if that makes a difference and brings more people out, especially if people are more passionate about this election.
Well, and I think that's a very good point, because we have to go back to the two Mulroney victories to see the last time that 3 out of 4 eligible voters participated in a Canadian federal election. We had a voter turnout of 75%. Both in 1984 and 1988. And oddly enough, 1988 was also an election that was mainly about our relationship with the United States, with the free trade deal that Mulroney wanted to negotiate. So the fact that so many people are following the Trump story and the tariff story, either closely or moderately closely, leads me to believe that turnout might be higher this time around than it was back in 2021. The expectation back then was, you know, people already voted through the COVID-19 pandemic. We saw this in some of the provinces, and maybe we'll get closer to 70% when it comes to voter turnout, but it was not the case.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing it when it happens, and we'll have you back on the Breaker.News podcast to crunch all the numbers. Thanks again to Mario Caseco, the president of Research Co., talking about his latest poll about how people perceive their relationship with their governments and how they perceive the power or lack of power of their votes as we head towards the April 28th federal election. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We are entering the next section of our debate tonight, what we're calling the leader's choice, something a little bit different. Each of you will get the chance to ask a question, any question, of any other leader. You can then debate the answer, and each one on one will last for 3 minutes. So, Mr. Singh, you have the first option here. Who do you want to ask your question of?
Mr. Carney.
Go for it.
Mr. Carney, as chair of Brookfield Investments, your company is one of the biggest tax dodgers in Canada. As chair, you approved decisions where Brookfield Investments bought up affordable homes, kicked out the tenants, and jacked up the rates. As prime minister, one of the first things you did was a tax cut that helped out mostly millionaires. And you have a plan to cut services for people. Now, I expect that of Mr. Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives. That's very much a conservative plan. But my concern is that doesn't sound like what people want for a Liberal leader. So my question to you is, Mr. Carney, whose side are you really on?
Thank you. Thank you very much for that question, Mr. Singh. I'm on the side of Canadians. I'm in this for Canadians. I work for Canadians.
But your track record doesn't show that, though.
I have a track record of public service for this country. Go back to something Mr. Blanchet referenced earlier, which is, have I resolved any crises? We're in Quebec. If you ask anyone in the finance industry, if you ask anyone in government in Quebec in 2008, they'll know that I resolved the biggest crisis in Quebec. Yeah,
you won't have fun.
But
60 million.
This is for these two. Yes, I have had a long career in the private sector. I'm proud of that career. I've always acted with integrity, and it brings me with experience that I can apply in this moment of crisis.
And you certainly have served the country. But the problem is, who have you served? You've served to benefit those at the very top. You jacked up the price of homes for people living in affordable homes as a strategic decision. You dodged taxes. And then your decisions as prime minister show you're not prioritizing people, but you're prioritizing big business, billionaires.
So the what have we done as a government directly? So we've gone directly to workers using all of our proceeds from the tariffs, committing all of them for workers, the workers most affected.
But the employment insurance isn't
unlike
high
others, unlike others who plan to use them, to cut taxes. We are
the
focused
amount of
on
the EI is not high enough, though. You have to accept that. Right now,
there will be additional programs. I am fully confident that the next government, whatever government is formed, or certainly if I'm in the next government, we will make additional programs.
But you didn't do that so far, though.
Well, I can't.
You could have increased the amount, though.
May I make a core point here, if I may, which is that when you think about workers here today and people watching at home, particularly younger people, there is an enormous opportunity in the trades, in the skilled trades. We are going to build this country in a way that has not been seen before. We are literally talking about hundreds of thousands, not jobs, but careers
but
in the trade.
Worried,
and
Carney,
that's why we're investing in apprenticeships and mid-career.
But I think people are worried, Mr. Carney, if New Democrats aren't there to force Liberals to make sure they remember about people, they will forget.
Gentlemen, that is time. Moving on to Mr. Poilievre now, who has his opportunity to ask the question of whomever he'd like here, and that will be
Mr. Carney. But if I could begin by setting the stage. The choice in this election is, after a lost Liberal decade of rising cost and crime and a falling economy under America's thumb, do we want to elect them to a fourth term? Or do we want to change? Change so that you can afford food and homes. Change so that you can be safe on your street. And change so that your paycheck grows faster than your cost of living. Change with a new Conservative government. Because Mr. Carney is not change. Mr. Carney, in 2020, it was recorded, you began advising Justin Trudeau. It's still on the Liberal Party website today that you are Justin Trudeau's economic advisor. They might want to update your website on that. On June 3rd of 2021, you said that inflation would be a sign of economic progress. And you advised governments, including Justin Trudeau's, your Liberal government, to print money, which led to the worst inflation crisis in a generation. Now, that means that mothers went to bed with empty fridges and empty bank accounts, worried how they'd feed their kids, that seniors worried they'd be evicted from their homes, that young people believed they'd never be able to own a home in the first place. Now, in retrospect, that you look back on the Liberal decisions that you advised Justin Trudeau to take, will you look to the camera in the eye and apologize to the many people who suffered as a result of the inflationary policies that you advised Justin Trudeau to implement?
You know, it's... I said earlier, but I'm going to say it again. I know you want to be running against Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau isn't here.
Are you denying you were his economic advisor?
I did not provide any of that advice. Well, I did not provide any of that advice.
It's on the Liberal Party website.
I'm sorry.
Are you accusing your Liberal Party of lying about your role? Because it says today you can go to the Liberal Party website now, and it says that you were Justin Trudeau's economic advisor.
The way you judge someone, in my view, is how they act, what they do when they have responsibility. Twice I was a central bank governor. And in both cases, in both cases when I was responsible for inflation, inflation was less than 2%. I'll add that when I was here responsible for the Bank of Canada, inflation was less than 2%. Our dollar was at parity. That is the kind of success that I can deliver for this country coming out of this crisis. And what is at stake here?
What is at stake here?
What is at stake here?
That gave us the worst inflation that we have had in a generation, because the policies that you implemented and those of the MPs that are still in your ministry.
To the
fellow Canadians,
crisis which
the last 10 years has been about the Liberals. The next 10 years should be about you.
And that's time. Mr. Carney, the good news is the next question is yours.
Well, I'm going to ask myself a question. I'm going to ask a question which has been troubling me. And it's troubled me because, you know, we are in a very dangerous and divided world.
Who is it to?
I'm going to ask a question of Mr. Poilievre. Why not? We're in a dangerous and divided world. We talked earlier about the challenges in the Middle East. The threats from Iran, threats from Russia, Russia's aggression in Ukraine. We have the threats from China, which I raised. We have the United States, which is fundamentally changing its security relationships, its commercial relationships. We have all this. And in the context of that, everyone on this stage, Mr. Blanchet, Mr. Singh, myself, we have our top secret security clearance. We have our top secret security clearance. I got mine within 3 weeks. It wasn't hard, but I felt it was important that I had it so I could be in a position to be informed about that dangerous world and take decisions at. And Mr. Poilievre, it is now 950 days, if my numbers are right, since you've had the opportunity to get your top secret security clearance, and you've refused. Why?
Well, first of all, I have got my security clearance when I was a minister. I got top secret clearance at the time, so there's no problem getting that. But when the government made this recent offer, they said that if I got the secret security clearance briefings, that I would be gagged under the security law, and I could be prosecuted if I spoke freely about matters of foreign interference. Now, given that Canada has experienced Chinese interference by Beijing, the government of China, in two consecutive elections, I needed to do my job to speak freely without fear of prosecution. And that was not something I would be allowed to do. Even Thomas Mulcair, the former leader of the NDP, said that when he was the leader of the opposition, he never would have accepted the kind of gag order that your government and Mr. Trudeau's government was attempting to impose on me. And it's good that I'd made that decision, because it has allowed me to speak freely about things like the case where one of your candidates, sir, actually said that he wanted to send a political opponent to China under a bounty threatening his life or imprisonment, and you refused to get rid of him. Now, it might have something to do with the fact that you went to China not long ago to get a $250 million loan for your company, but the reality is you refused to stand up for a Canadian who was being threatened by a foreign government. And I was able to speak freely on that matter because I refused the gag order that the Liberal government attempted to impose on me.
Well, there's a couple of interesting things. I think people at home have seen a robust debate here, and it's been a robust campaign. And it has not stopped Mr. Blanchet or Mr. Singh at times during his campaign by making challenges with respect to these issues. So one can address it. I will observe, as someone with a top secret security clearance, that China is not the only country that is accused of foreign interference.
And gentlemen, that is time we'll leave for the segment. That's our time. And Mr. Singh, you get the first word on a closing statement.
Certainly. Thank you. Because you voted for New Democrats, we were able to build this country that we love. Universal health care and pensions, because you voted for us. Because you voted for New Democrats, we were able to fight to bring in dental care, pharmacare, and child care. Because you voted for us, because you supported us. You have the power with your vote to send more New Democrats to Ottawa to continue that fight, to make sure that no government cuts the things that we hold dear, like our health care, to ensure that we can do everything possible to make life more affordable by making it more affordable to buy your groceries and to get a home. I'm asking for your support in this election so that I can continue to fight to defend the things that make Canada, Canada, the things that we hold dear, the things that make us proud to be Canadian.
Thank you, Mr. Singh. Mr. Carty.
We are facing the biggest crisis of our lifetimes. Donald Trump is trying to fundamentally change the world economy, the trading system. But really what he's trying to do to Canada, he's trying to break us so the U.S. can own us. They want our land. They want our resources, they want our water, they want our country. And we're all going to stand up against Donald Trump. I'm ready. I've managed crises over the years. I've built strong economies. We will fight back with counter-tariffs. We will protect our workers and those businesses, and we will build the strongest economy. We will build Canada strong. I'm asking for your support, for the honor of doing so. Thank you.
Monsieur Poiliev.
Only in Canada could someone start where I began and get to this stage. I was born to a single mother and adopted by school teachers who raised me to believe in the incredible Canadian promise that anyone who worked hard could do anything. That promise feels broken today. Many of you worried about paying your bills, feeding your families, or ever even owning a home. You're worried your kids are in danger. But I'm here to say it doesn't have to be this way. With change, we can restore the Canadian promise so that hard work gets you a beautiful house on a safe street under a proud flag. We can do it with hope for a change.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In FocusTaiwan.tw, 62 military personnel hold Chinese residence permit, says minister. As such, they cannot do jobs related to collecting intelligence and confidential data. The issue of whether Taiwanese military personnel have Chinese identity documents has been in the spotlight after a recent incident involving a member of the Navy, surnamed Yang, who was found to have held Chinese citizenship for 10 years. In ABC News Australia, unsolicited email from Liberal Party directed voter to data harvesting operation when they clicked unsubscribe. The website asks for personal details under the guise of applying for a postal vote, then directs voters to the Australia Electoral Commission's website. There are exemptions in Australia's Privacy Act and the Spam Act for political parties, which means politicians are not bound by the same restrictions as commercial businesses. The Australian Communications and Media Authority says political parties are not required to provide a way to unsubscribe from email communications under the Spam Act. In Kyoto News, 7-Eleven stores of future to open at Osaka Expo with avatar robots. The two convenience stores at the World Exposition in Osaka, Japan, will showcase what it expects its outlets to look like in 2030, featuring floors that generate power when stepped on. These stores will be cashless. The World Expo in Osaka runs through October 13th. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, officials now have a much better idea of how many homeless people live in Multnomah County. It's a lot. According to the new data, almost 15,000 people were homeless in Portland in February. That's nearly 3,000 more than the county estimated had been homeless in January 2024, a jump county officials attribute in part to their improved data collection work. Also among the county's findings, at least 6,800 people were living unsheltered in Portland in February, either outside or in a vehicle or some other place considered unfit for human habitation. And 7,500 people were chronically homeless, more than half of whom are unsheltered. In the Seattle Times, international students in Washington sue Trump administration for revoking legal status. Last week, the Trump administration canceled the visas of at least 15 current international students and recent graduates of Washington universities. Identified anonymously as John, Jane, or Student Doe in federal court filings, the students detailed finding out their names were deleted from a federal database of foreign students. Removal from the database, known as the Student and Exchange Visitor Information System, or SEVIS for short, effectively terminates legal status in the U.S. And check out the Breaker.News and BobMackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Vancouver mayor campaign for by-election support from pro-Beijing group. And despite record deficit, EBNDP spends on Trump tariffs ads. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Christians and Jews across British Columbia on this Easter and Passover weekend. Did you know that the oldest wooden church in BC is in Maple Ridge, the 1859-built St. John the Divine Anglican Church? And the oldest synagogue in Canada is Victoria's Congregation Emmanuel, which was built in 1863. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 20th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 20th of April in 2020, the price of oil dropped to zero for the first time as a result of the Russia-Saudi Arabia price war, early in the pandemic, too? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there, too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.